Chapter 8. Fingers on her skin wake Konan, but slowly. It's not a touch meant to hurt, but an indulgence. An easy sweep of calloused fingertips across her bare skin, down the muscle of her arm, then back up. She hums in appreciation before she even opens her eyes, and the touch firms, slides up, then over her collarbone and down. The blankets fall away as Konan rolls over, letting her eyes slide open, and she smiles up at Tsume before she can even think to stop herself. Tsume grins back, fierce and sharp, and leans over her, one hand planted on the pillow. "Hey there," she says, on the edge of sly, and Konan feels something like laughter bubbling up in her chest, just a thread of it. But it's warm and soft and sweet beneath her skin. "Good morning," she answers, raising a brow, and Tsume chuckles, leaning down. The kiss is light, familiar, and it's been so long since Konan had something like this. Decades at this point. She slides her hand up Tsume's arm, feeling out the definition, the scars, the firm skin, then closes her fingers around Tsume's elbows and wrists. Laughter jars from Tsume's throat as she hits the mattress on her back, and Konan slides over her, straddling her waist. She leans forward, and Tsume's dark eyes are a challenge, full of heat. "Feeling frisky?" she asks. "Inspired," Konan corrects, amused. "But it's true." She brushes a thumb across Tsume's ribs, slides her hand up, and there are so many scars, so many signs of a life spent fighting. But the hands on her hips don't even bruise. Konan slept with a few Ame shinobi over the years, a handful of civilians. But Tsume is sharper than all of them combined, more dangerous, just not right now. She kisses Tsume, slow, drawing it out so that she can remember every moment down the line. Hums, drawing back, and smiles down at Tsume, feeling her grip tighten just faintly on Konan's hips. "Inspired, like to paint a masterpiece?" Tsume teases, rubbing at Konan's hip bone. It's almost an idle gesture, except that it's entirely deliberate. "Or inspired like you're gonna make me miss my meeting with the Jonin commander." "Can't it be both?" Konan counters and leans down again, tightening her thighs against Tsume's side, cupping a breast to see the way Tsume's breath hitches. She kisses her, deeper this time, but still slow. "Mom!" a voice shouts through the door. A metaphorical bucket of ice water dumped right over Konan's head. A moment later, a fist bangs on the hardwood. Loud knocks echo through the room and make Konan twitch hard. "Mom, get up!" Tsume groans. "Hana, get lost!" she calls back. "It's a summons from Tsunade-sama," the girl informs her, unimpressed. "Shizune's waiting for you." Tsume growls, short and low, and it makes Konan shiver despite herself. She convinces herself to slide off Tsume, though, and Tsume sits up with a sigh, shaking out her wild hair. "Fuck, I'm sorry," she says, and Konan can tell she means it. What a way to end things. The pull of her is magnetic, irresistible. Konan hums, tips her head, but she can't quite pull her eyes away from Tsume's mouth. "I don't know. I thought it was decent," she offers. Tsume laughs, reaching up to cup her cheek, and kisses her again. "Decent's a good start," she allows, pauses, looking Konan over, and asks, "Your intelligence gathering's almost done?" "All right." Konan takes a breath, tries not to lean into the heat of Tsume's hand. Yes, she says softly, pauses, watching Tsume watch her, and has to smile a little. You managed to distract me from my mission. With a grin, Tsume kisses her one more time. Distracted you right into bed, she agrees. Now, that's a sword I'm happy to fall on for Konoha's sake. Konan laughs a little, sliding her fingers into Tsume's hair. I'll save your son, she thinks, fierce. And the years since Yaiko's death have been gray, grim, but this is a point of light. This is a mission far more immediate than any dream of world peace, and she can feel it resonate through her bones. Tsume is beautiful and broken, and she can laugh because Kiba escaped Konoha's hold. Konan will never let him fall back into their hands. For Kiba's sake, and for Tsume's as well. You were very thoroughly distracting, she agrees throatily, and smiles when Tsume's eyes dilate. Kisses her one more time, because she can't resist. Mom! Hannah complains loudly. Shizune is waiting! Tsume mutters a curse, pulling away, and calls back. I'm coming! Don't get your panties in a knot! Konan lets out a breath of amusement. But when Tsume slides out of bed, she follows, picking up her clothes. The cloak, with its coating of paper, still looks like a haori, and she folds it over her arm, doesn't bother putting it on. Tsume is already in her uniform, though without her flak jacket, and she watches Konan dress with a lazy sort of appreciation that curls through Konan's stomach, warm and pleasant. If you're ever on another mission nearby and want to be distracted, Tsume offers, the slant of her smile taking on a wry edge. Consider my door open and my body willing. Konan laughs, and it feels freeing, heady. And if you ever want to defect to Ame, she says, consider me the same. Tsume sighs, runs a hand through her hair. I'm a Konoha nin. No matter how much I hate people in the village sometimes, she says wryly. Leaving through the front door? Kakuzu will likely have a conniption just at what's happened already. It's better not to risk his blood pressure further by walking right through the middle of a clan compound in broad daylight. Through the window, she says, if you don't mind. Tsume snickers. Better for you to dodge Hana anyway, she says. She's got a good nose on her, and neither of us is gonna be subtle. The Inuzuka as a whole must have more gossip about the rest of the village than any other clan, Konan thinks. Amused, she pulls her cloak on, then leans in to give Tsume one last kiss. Your story will have a happy ending, she says softly. Insistently, and Tsume meets her eyes, holds her gaze. I hope so, she says roughly, then touches Konan's cheek and turns away. Konan is out the window before her footsteps even start down the stairs. Konoha just after dawn is quiet, almost sleepy. There are shinobi patrols on the rooftops, but they move quickly and don't pause. And Konan keeps her head down as she heads towards the market. It's practically deserted, only a few figures setting up stalls. But there's a familiar figure leaning back against the wall of a building, mostly in shadow. Kakuzu looks rested, at least. And when he scowls at Konan, it's a little milder than she would have expected. Found somewhere to spend the night? She asks, raising a brow at him. Isn't that my question? He retorts, and levels a judgmental look at the curve of Konan's shoulder, where it's revealed by her dress. With dignity, Konan smooths a hand over the mark, letting her layer of paper slide over it, and very determinedly ignores the sense memory of Tsume's mouth there. Did you actually pay for a room at the inn? She asks. She doesn't expect that he did, but he also doesn't look like he slept outside somewhere. Kakuzu scoffs. Of course not, he says. Why bother? You are not the only one who can pick up a piece of ass. It seems counterproductive to tell him that's not how things went at all, so Konan doesn't bother. Are they still in one piece? She asks dryly. The question gets her a sour look. Don't worry, Kakuzu tells her, tone dark, as if that will persuade her not to ask anything further. He was chatty as hell and in possession of all limbs this morning. Chatty? Now Konan really wants to know who it was, especially if he escaped the night intact. She thought that was one of the things that would drag Kakuzu straight to the end of his patience. Apparently, reading that in her face, Kakuzu snorts, crossing his arms over his chest and slouching a little deeper into his cloak. It's satisfying making people like that finally shut up, he says. And there's a distinct thread of smugness to it that makes Konan roll her eyes. Find anything? She asks, because Kakuzu is clearly content to keep his secrets. Kakuzu grunts, gaze sliding past her to watch the market behind them. Konoha has shit security, he says disgustedly. But they keep their files locked up tight. If I'd killed a few people, I could have gotten in, but without that? Well, Konan was more or less expecting that. She grimaces, then tugs her cloak a little more firmly over her shoulders. No information on Danzo, and the Nanabe vanished before we could get to it, she says quietly. Nagato won't be pleased. He's not going to be pleased with your idea of a detour, Kakuzu mutters, tugging his hood down as a patrol passes overhead. Konan ignores that, because Nagato will live with it. She's got a little information on Konoha's reaction to Kiba, and that satisfies her well enough for now. Maybe Sasori can dig up more, once he figures out what happened to Kabuto. The information is important, but not vital. She and Nagato have already made sure that every bit of Danzo's information on them was far out of date, and they haven't left any trails for Jiraiya to follow either. Not that he ever tried. Apparently, a year of training was sufficient for him to abandon them in the middle of a ruined country without a backwards glance. Sometimes Konan forgets just how fiercely she hates Konoha. Both the village as a whole and the people inside of it. When she claws down the cold fury that's threatening to drown her, Kakuzu is watching her closely, eyes narrowed, his mouth is a flat line, but there's a touch of concern buried deep in his expression. We leaving? He asks. Konan breathes out, closes her eyes for a brief moment, and nods. I think we're both ready, she says wryly. Kakuzu grunts, glancing back at the market as it slowly fills. Not as bad as Taki, is his verdict, even though his expression is grim. They all have their pits of despair, and no two are alike. Not even hers and Nagato's, Konan reflects. Nagato's world ended in Ame, and he blamed Hanzo. The world at large. Konan's ended in the same place, but her anger falls squarely at Konoha's feet. Konoha had a hand in Kakuzu's fall, as well, but Taki is where his anger lies. Before she can respond, though, there's a flicker, a familiar flare of chakra behind her, touched with an abrasive edge that hides beneath the bright surface. And she very carefully doesn't stiffen, turns her head looking out, and there, at the edge of the market, the figure of Konoha's Jinchuriki, small and golden-haired and standing together with another boy, also familiar. They're bent over a book, And the QB Jinchuriki's face is furrowed in a confused scowl as he scratches his head. Slowly, deliberately, careful not to make the motion jerky, Konan turns around and puts her back to the genin. Kakuzu is watching her, eyes narrowed suspiciously, and Konan tips her head. "The QB," she says, and Kakuzu's eyes widen sharply. "And Itachi's little brother, too." Kakuzu mutters a curse, but he doesn't move either. "They saw you on the last mission," he says, and it's not a question. Konan doesn't bother answering, just glances at the boy's reflection in the closest shop window, contemplating all the possible courses of action here. There are no adults with the pair, and they're entirely caught up in each other and the book, distracted, vulnerable. Of course, this is the center of Konoha, and there's no saying how many shinobi are close by. Kakuzu seems to be thinking the same thing, because he's scowling deeply as he watches them. "Fucking stupid having him right there and not doing anything," he says, and flicks a glance towards the looming walls. Konan does too. She can be past them in seconds with her wings, even carrying another person's weight, but... "We need at least four of the beasts sealed before the statue can contain the QB," she says, dissatisfied with a reminder. "It's too strong otherwise." "Containing a tailed beast isn't the same as containing a genin," is Kakuzu's verdict, and there's a cold light in his eyes, something calculating. "Itachi's planning to kill the other kid, right?" Konan frowns, but she seems to recall something like that. "He left him alive to taunt him," she offers, "and so he'd be a decent opponent later." "He's an arrogant little bitch," Kakuzu mutters, but meets Konan's eyes. "They look close. We could snatch the Uchiha and use him to control the Jinchuriki." The idea has merit. Konan tips her head, weighing the odds, and they're rather good, judging by Naruto's reaction to Kiba. He's very devoted to his friends, even after they betray him. And to take a teammate... "We can't take them yet," she says, and turns enough to study the boys, the way dark and bright heads are bent together and almost touching. "We haven't finished locating all of the beasts, and it could take long enough to give them a chance to escape. But I think it's a far better plan than we currently have." Kakuzu's smirk doesn't have an ounce of humor in it. "Itachi and Kisame already showed Konoha they could walk right in," he says, and the flick of one hand has a genjutsu curling up around them, hiding them from view. "Should we make a statement?" Konan snorts, but lifts her hands in front of her. "A bit of terror can be motivating," she says, and paper rises from her skin, dozens of sheets splitting off. They fold themselves into butterflies, whirl up and out to fill the market with razor-edged wings. Konan smiles, hears a shout of alarm and surprise and anger, and then more and more, and meets Kakuzu's amused gaze. "Shall we?" she asks politely. Kakuzu follows her down a side street, then onto the main one, headed right for the gate. They don't hurry, keep their steps even and steady as shinobi flash over the roofs and past them. It's as easy as breathing to fall in behind a departing band of farmers as they head through the gate. "Any more bright ideas?" Kakuzu asks, but he sounds a good bit easier than he did before. There's a chunin to one side of the gate, and when he glances up to look them over, Kakuzu catches his eye. The chunin promptly flushes to the roots of his spiky black hair, ducking down to hide behind his clipboard, and Kakuzu smirks. Konan looks from Kakuzu to the chunin, who is definitely not chatty right now, and raises a brow. "What did you even do to him?" Kakuzu huffs, but turns back towards the road. Gave him what he begged for. He says, that note of smugness back in his voice. And Konan rolls her eyes again. And no more details, and I promise to keep my plans to myself, she offers. Kakuzu only has to mull it over for a second. Deal, he agrees, and then levels a threatening finger in her face. And you don't just keep them to yourself, you don't go through with them either. Konan gives him her sweetest smile and makes no promises. That was boring, Kiba complains. And it's only partly for show. Only partly to distract himself from the scene they left in the woods. He'd been expecting a hell of a lot more of a fight against Orochimaru's apprentice. Though, working with Itachi probably means a quick end to all fights. Hana always used to tell him that the Sharingan was a cheat, and Kiba's definitely starting to see her point. Itachi straightens from checking Kabuto's pulse, stone-faced, and inclines his head. He was not expecting Akatsuki's retaliation, he says, and folds his hands into his sleeves. Nor was he expecting poisons beyond his own. Kiba scoffs, and if he didn't feel sick and empty and aching, there might be a seed of pride in his chest. Genma's recipes were enough to throw Kabuto off balance, and between that and the fact that Itachi can see through genjutsu, the asshole didn't have a chance. Wonder if Orochimaru was expecting us, he says. Because Naruto said that Orochimaru and Kabuto were close. It seems weird that Orochimaru wouldn't have told Kabuto if he caught wind they were coming. But it also seems weird that Orochimaru just wouldn't know. He's Konoha's biggest boogeyman, has been outsmarting Anbu and Jiraiya of the Sannin for decades. Him getting caught by Hidan and Deidara feels strange to think about. The Sandame injured Orochimaru during their fight, Itachi says, and Kiba blinks. Naruto had mentioned something like that, hadn't he? His arms, I think? Kiba confirms, squinting as he tries to remember. Thinking of Konoha makes him feel a little sick, but the village, old things that happened before, not an exploded clearing in the bodies of his friends. Shit. He has to swallow against the building horror, shove it back down, and focus on something else before he can say, that's why he was trying to find Tsunade or some shit. You think he still hasn't fixed them? For a long moment, Itachi is silent. Then he inclines his head again. It would explain Kabuto's withdrawal from Sasori if he were forced to pick between masters due to Orochimaru's injury. Yeah, that's what Kiba was thinking, too. As unnerving as it is to have something in common with Itachi. He looks away, checking Kabuto's limp body for any sign of movement. But Kabuto is still out of it, and likely will be until Kiba gives him the antidote. He wasn't expecting Kiba's blades to be poisoned. Had taken a hit in the name of avoiding Itachi, who seemed like the bigger threat. A stupid mistake, but Kiba figures it's pretty understandable. He hasn't exactly been advertising the fact that he uses poisons, and it's definitely not something Inuzuka are known for. He can't remember if he hit one of the Konoha's squad with his knives or not. Maybe the crow guy? It probably doesn't matter anymore. We better check in on Hidan and Deidara. Let him know we got Kabuto, he says, and when Itachi makes no move to touch Kabuto, Kiba growls low in his throat and does it himself, heaving Kabuto's body up over his shoulder and rising to his feet as best as he can. Kabuto's a hell of a lot taller than him, and his knees practically drag on the ground, but at least Kiba's standing. No thanks to Itachi, of course, who's staring at him without blinking, without moving so much as a single facial muscle. Kiba is so far past creeped out that he's come right around to Zen. This is fine. Awful, but fine. He can deal. All he has to do is keep breathing. "Back out the way we came?" he asks. Itachi doesn't answer, just turns and starts walking back towards the door. And Kiba pulls a face at his back. The smell of fresh blood isn't just coming from Itachi now, and that makes it easier to mutter, "Asshole," as he hefts Kiba up and follows. If Itachi hears it, he shows no sign, just keeps walking. That's even more aggravating. But Kiba locks his comment behind his teeth, reminds himself of the comatose Otonin in the hallway, and follows. It's possible he bounces Kabuto's head off the edge of the doorframe, but that's not technically his fault. He's 13, and Kabuto is a fully grown man. Just asking Kiba to carry him is already hard enough, and Kiba won't be blamed for what happens to stray bits. Also, Kabuto deserves it. Traitors fucking suck, and Kiba would know. Thankfully, they don't meet anyone else in the corridor, and the only sound is the echo of explosions from near the main entrance. Things are on fire and people are screaming, which absolutely means that Hidan and Deidara manage to get through the door. Kiba cranes his neck, trying to see where they are, but it's hard to tell. Some of Deidara's clay creatures scurry past, vanishing through a vent and dropping into the caverns. But Kiba can't currently ask them for a status report, and Itachi seems content to meander towards the fight without hurry. There might be less stress about being found out when Kiba's not working with Konan, but gods, he misses her. She'd already have this mission done and over with. Ahead of them, there's a deafening blast, sending pieces of stone raining across the meadow to the sound of Deidara's laughter. Kiba sneezes, shaking his head to get the suddenly overpowering scent of scorched flesh and scattered blood out of his nose, and almost gags, hit by the overwhelming reek of fury and metallic scales and chemicals, snaps a hand up to cover his nose, reeling back, and snarls, "Itachi!" Instantly, Itachi spins, leaps to the side in a blur. A massive white snake slams into the ground where he just stood, then lunges again, and Itachi darts sideways, out of the way of flashing fangs. Kiba would help, honest, except for one small detail. There's a shadow rising behind the snake, a figure full of fury, and the redoubled surge of Orochimaru's scent is enough to prove it's him, even if the body looks wrong. Like a puppet with an ill-fitting mask, slightly skewed, and pure horror curls through Kiba's stomach. "I think," Orochimaru hisses, "that you have something of mine." "Fuck!" "Back the hell off, snake face!" he snaps, and doesn't let himself step back. "I'm the only one with the antidote, and Kabuto really doesn't make an attractive sleeping beauty." Orochimaru snarls, and there's something moving under his skin, a ripple of flesh that should not be able to move that way, but does. "You're going to challenge me?" he demands, and laughs. Somehow that's even worse than the face thing. It crawls down Kiba's spine like ice, and he can't tell if he wants to dive for cover or just turn tail and run. "Little boy, I will keep your head in a jar." "You are one fucking psycho asshole," Kiba says, voice cracking from what he tells himself is puberty and not terror, and leaps three long jumps back as he grabs for his soldier pills, pulls four of them from his pouch. And that's the very edge of what he can handle without a week-long crash afterwards. But there's no choice. He doesn't have any plans here, didn't expect this, doesn't know all of Orochimaru's abilities. Orochimaru killed the Sun Daime, and he's been a missing nin since before Kiba's mom was clan head. Desperately, he brings a hand up, summons a clone, and as it appears, he heaves Kabuto's limp body into its arms. Go! He snaps, and the clone doesn't waste time. It bolts, dragging Kabuto with it as it heads for Hidan and Deidara. And in the same moment, Kiba draws his white knife and flings himself forward, right at Orochimaru's throat. It's a feint, a reckless charge he knows won't work. But when Orochimaru slashes a hand down, Kiba leaps, twists around the blade, and drops to the ground on all fours, launches himself straight forward. But a kick catches him in the chest before he can bring his knife to bear. Kiba hits the ground hard, rolls back to his feet, and tries desperately, wildly, to think of a plan. Out of my way, Orochimaru threatens, and a forked tongue slides past his lips, snake-like. Kiba realizes in a sudden rush that he's fighting another clan shinobi, another shinobi from a clan that's impossibly close to their summons, the same way the Inuzuka are. Orochimaru acts like a snake because he's part snake, at least where his chakra is concerned. Specialized for generations, and it makes for a strong shinobi, but there's always a drawback. All he needs to do is confuse Orochimaru long enough for Hidan to get here, or for Itachi to finish off the snake. Kiba grabs for one of the smoke bombs in his weapons pouch, yanks it out, and throws it up. Eyes! He shouts in warning. Sees Itachi's head snap in his direction, but doesn't pause as he brings his hands up. Fire surges, hits the glass ball. Black fire leaps across the body of the snake summons, just as the powdered metal in the bomb ignites. There's a flare of brilliant white light, searing, blinding, but Kiba slams his eyes closed, darts back with his mouth clamped shut. The magnesium crackles, flares, and the other powders hit the ground, billowing gray-green smoke that surges upwards. It reeks of herbs and chemicals, and Kiba checks the direction of the wind, calculates how long the magnesium can burn, and lands safely. Turns, looking for Itachi, and takes a step forward. Hands grab his arms, drag him back, and he yelps, wrenches around with his knife leading. It just misses Orochimaru's cheek, and Orochimaru laughs, victorious, opens his mouth like he's going to sink his teeth into Kiba's throat. Fuck off! A voice screeches, high and familiar, and Hidan plummets down, slamming feet first into Orochimaru, and sending them both crashing away, rolling across the grass. Orochimaru is the first to find his feet, twisting up like a cobra striking, and he rises just in time to catch a bird-shaped bomb right in the face. Ha! Deidara says, high above them on a larger bird. He brings two fingers up. Take your shitty permanent art and stuff it up your ass! The detonation is almost deafening, and Kiba staggers upright, shaking his head hard. Got Kabuto? He shouts up to Deidara. Deidara flashes him a thumbs up and kicks the motionless bundle at his feet. Hurry the fuck up, he tells Hidan. I want to go somewhere I can take a bath, And I want a fucking sacrifice to Jushin-sama. Hidan cackles, grinning. He spins his scythe, then hurls it forward, flipping up into the air. A hard wrench at the cable as Orochimaru dodges and the blades come flying back. But Orochimaru twists through them like he's boneless, lands and slams a hand down on the ground. Manda! He snarls, and the air shudders. A massive snake bursts into being, easily 10 times Hidan's height, as it curls up and over, looming above them. Its body slides right over the magnesium fire, snuffs it out in an instant, and it doesn't even seem to notice. Snaps at Deidara, and Deidara squawks, sends his creation rocketing higher to get out of range, but it keeps going, keeps rising. Kiba hurls 3 of his bombs as high into the air as he can and shouts, Deidara! Deidara curses, but drops an explosive into their midst, and it detonates with a clatter of exploding glass, a billow of smoke that's choking thick. Manda lashes out, tail a destructive sweep through the cloud, but it's cover enough. Kiba ducks away, sees another figure through the smoke, and grabs at the distinctive black and red cloak. "Let's go," he hisses. Itachi inclines his head, takes a step. There's a whirl of leaves, a blur of motion, and they're suddenly halfway across the meadow. Kiba staggers, not expecting the sudden change, and turns, but Deidara's bird is already swooping towards them. "Fucking summons," he snarls as soon as he's close enough, and brings it in for a landing, jerking his head at Kiba. "Come on, I don't have enough clay to take out a summons that big without blowing myself up, too." "Shit," Kiba mutters, but he scrambles up the creature's back, Itachi hopping up behind him. "Can you see Hidan? That asshole deserves whatever the hell he gets down there," Deidara says scornfully, but takes off again, and as the bird circles, Kiba cranes his neck over the side, trying to see any hint of movement. "When the hell did Orochimaru get his arms back?" he asks. "I thought he was hurt." "We did too, Deidara makes a face. "I guess we caught him stuffing himself into that new body. It's fucking creepy." "You can say that again." Kiba tries not to shiver at the memory of other things moving beneath Orochimaru's skin. Apparently the jutsu wasn't quite finished when they interrupted him. "There." Itachi leans past Kiba, pointing down past the lash of Manda's body. "He's fighting the summons. I don't see Orochimaru."
"Of fucking course,"
Deidara says disgustedly, and looks at Kiba. "You got any ninja wire on you?" Kiba blinks, looks down at the tiny shape of Hidan getting punted across the field by the massive angry snake, and then looks back at Deidara.
"You want me to lasso him?"
he asks incredulously. Deidara tosses his hair over his shoulder and smirks.
"If we're lucky, he'll cut off his head,
he confirms. Silently, Itachi pulls a coil of wire from his rope and offers it up.
"I fucking hate all of you," Kiba says, and takes it.